You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Another edition of Bavarian Podcast Works. This is Chuck Smith, and I'm here to bring you the weekend warm-up, BFW's weekly show, where we hit on all of the latest and greatest news of the week. So much going on with Bayern Munich, of course. After last weekend's devastating, debilitating, whatever adjective you want to use, horrible loss to Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich is officially reeling and spinning out of control. It seemed so good a couple of weeks back before the international break, but here we are. 13 points behind Bayer Leverkusen with a match against Heidenheim this weekend that could be the prototypical trap game. Bayern Munich will look forward to facing Arsenal on Tuesday in the Champions League. Let's be honest, a lot of fans are not too thrilled, not too confident. So we'll dig into that. We will talk about Bayern Munich and what the team is like moving in to that Champions League matchup. And I won't give a preview or anything now because, quite frankly, we have to see what happens after this weekend's match against Heidenheim before we can even really start to think about Arsenal. But Bayern Munich is in a bit of trouble. Now, things, as I said, look so good a couple of weeks ago. And as we always have, we put the caveat on it knowing that it wasn't the greatest of competition. But watching how the team collapsed against Dortmund, it was really alarming and really disappointing. When you think about Arsenal coming up on Tuesday, this is a team clicking on all cylinders, apparently. They've got a lot of talent. They've got a good young coach. It's not a great matchup for Bayern Munich for a couple of reasons. Bayern, at this point, almost seems like a group of mercenaries playing together, trying to achieve one goal, but definitely not unified or even on the same page. Arsenal is a team that is growing and building and evolving. And as much as I probably wouldn't like to admit it, they are the favorites in the match. Now, I'm not discounting Bayern Munich. I think that they can have a good opportunity at least to make this a good competitive tie. I still kind of think that they could win it, but I am in the minority on that. There are not many fans giving Bayern a chance at this point to take down Arsenal. And I do think that that mercenary mentality is part of it. I think what we're seeing now with the team functioning is a coach who, he can improve his own reputation by winning the Champions League, but I think even he is assessing that it's a long shot. The Bundesliga is far gone. I mean, mathematically, Bayern is still active and alive, but there's no shot that they have a chance to come back if you look at it in reality. So you look at Bayern Munich and you look at the roster and you say, what good can you say about it heading into this Arsenal matchup? Are they really just a group of mercenaries now preparing themselves for next season or playing for their next contract? And there's probably a little bit of merit to anyone that feels that way. It's been completely disjointed. We haven't seen really any consistency, whether that means in coaching selections with the players or player performance. It just hasn't been as good as it needs to be. And I know one of the prevailing themes out there is that, well, if Bayer Leverkusen wasn't having this once-in-a-lifetime kind of season, that Bayern would be right in the mix. But quite frankly, there's no guarantee that if Leverkusen had a normal Leverkusen year, that Bayern would still be a runaway winner in the Bundesliga. We'd still be feeling the same way about how they're playing. We'd still feel like they're in a tough spot in the Champions League against Arsenal and that the team really might not be as good as it needs to be to be a serious contender in the Champions League. All of that would remain the same. But it all comes back to this matchup. Bayern has to come and get through the weekend and hopefully not get caught up in the trap. And then they have to turn around and quickly figure out a way to combat Arsenal. For Thomas Tuchel, he's going to have to make some very difficult lineup selections, and he's going to be making them facing some injury issues. Heading into the weekend, we know that Leroy Sané is banged up. He couldn't complete individual sessions. Quite frankly, the wear and tear that he has accumulated has put him in this spot. I don't see any reason to play him this weekend, and I'm not so sure even if he does get that rest that he'll be ready for Tuesday anyway. Kingsley Coman has not joined team training. Manuel Neuer has not joined team training. These are three pretty important players, especially to Tuchel, who earlier in the season really had a preference for starting all three of them. Obviously, Neuer is one who will always start when he's healthy, but Sané and Coman are at competitive positions. So the fact that Tuchel has leaned on them tells you that he probably would think about going back to them. And one of the reasons I think Tuchel will likely make some changes in heading into this Heidenheim match and then subsequently following it going into Arsenal is because I think he's going to fall back on something that we've seen time and time again with him, is he starts to think about the matchup and develop what he thinks is the best plan to combat that. And when you look at Arsenal, one thing that you'll look at is they're probably as fast or maybe even a little bit faster than Bayern Munich. So what will Tuchel do to combat that? Chances are he'll probably go back to one of the things he did earlier in the season and build a lineup based on speed. Didn't really work out earlier in the year, so we'll see if that approach does get put in by Tuchel, how it works against Arsenal. But this is, you know, a situation where the coach is going to have to make these calls. He's going to have to then, after some players inevitably are disappointed, have to try and get this team focused and rally against a very good team. So is it impossible for Bayern Munich to take down Arsenal at this point? I don't think so. I don't think it's impossible. Unlikely? Probably. Everything's going to have to break right for Bayern Munich to make the necessary strides to get in a place to where they can be competitive with Arsenal. And it's sad to say that, because this is a hell of a Bayern Munich team in terms of talent, but it just hasn't all clicked this season consistently enough for most fans to have confidence. And Arsenal, for whatever they are at this point in the season, they certainly look better than Bayern Munich does at this point. So I don't think it's impossible, but it is going to be very difficult, and especially with Bayern Munich having to go into London without any fans, they're going to have to try and figure out a way to at least claw out a point. It's not going to be easy. Tuchel knows that. But for me, I'm very curious as to how Tuchel handles it personnel-wise. At this stage, like, I don't even have an opinion on what he should do. He rolled with a lineup that worked for three games, and then it completely crapped out on him last weekend against Dortmund. So he could go back to the drawing board, and I think he will. I think he'll start to look at recent performances. I think he'll start to look at some of the players he leaned on. One thing I don't think he will do is put anyone out there that he doesn't trust. And there's a lot of speculation that he doesn't trust Dayo Upamecano at this point, but I kind of think that he's going to look back to Upamecano and see if he can lean on him to find and rediscover those good performances that Upamecano put forth earlier in the season. In a lot of ways, it's a little bit unfair that Upamecano has been benched like he has for a couple of admittedly really horrendous mistakes. But I think when you're a coach, you can't really let those things linger. You can't overthink it. And I was with Tuchel. I think you had to ride the hot hand of De Ligt and Dyer. But if Tuchel starts to feel like he has the inkling to want to play Upamecano or Kim Min-jae or maybe both of them, he's probably going to do that because he has nothing to lose. He has no attachment to the club any longer. He doesn't need to. He can do what he wants to do. And a lot of people would argue that because he did that earlier in the season, he put himself exactly into this position. So it's a really fascinating topic to see how Bayern Munich will come out, not just in how Tuchel will line them up, but how they'll play and function together. I think that we're going to see a team that is focused and motivated, and I think they'll fight. Will it be good enough to go into London and win? I don't know. And it seems weird to say that because I have been optimistic about things. I think I've been realistic about how they've played, but I've been optimistic about this matchup. And now I'm starting to waver a little bit because of just about everything going on at the moment. There's a lot of personnel uncertainty. The performance on the field last weekend was horrendous. The team's mentality could absolutely be called into question because they did appear to lose focus after they found out Leverkusen won. I mean, let's be honest, that was not your typical Bayern Dortmund matchup in terms of what Bayern looked like and how they played. I mean, as soon as Dortmund got ahead, Bayern flat out quit in my mind. I don't think that they put forth their best effort, and that's a shame. But now you have these two matches, and it's an odd spot for Heidenheim because normally you would say, well, this is a game that Bayern Munich should steamroll the competition. Heidenheim, I think, is in 12th place. It's not a great Heidenheim team by any means. They're not bad, but they're not at the level of Bayern Munich. But this whole focus, this issue of focus and what Tuchel is doing, and can whoever he picks to go out on the field, can they get it together and have the chemistry required to win a game in the Bundesliga? And it's a big question. We've seen everything from stagnant and choppy offensive performances, invisible midfields, lack of communication and poor positioning on defense, lack of awareness on defense. We've even seen some poor goalkeeping. We've seen the worst of what Bayern Munich can be spread across a few games, right? One game, it might be the offense that's terrible. Another game, it might be the defense. But we've seen various points where all of those things really stood out. And now you have to hope that you get to these next two matches, and you have to hope that you see none of them, that everything comes together, that Tuchel's going to push all the buttons, he's going to call on all the right players, and that everyone's going to be in sync. Really tough to believe that that's going to happen. And I think that kind of segues in nicely to one of the stories that we saw this week, where Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, the former CEO of Bayern, former great player, I mean, still a big figure in the club, he basically called out the players and said they're not as hungry. And to me, it was a very fascinating topic, because there is a point in a lot of athletes' careers where they've made a lot of money, they've won a lot of games, they've won the biggest titles, and it's almost like they start to get a little bit content. And I never really considered that the core of Bayern Munich would get content. When I say the core, I'm talking about Thomas Müller and Manuel Neuer, Joshua Kimmich, Leon Goretzka, Leroy Sané, Serge Gnabry. Are they content? And I still, even looking at that, I don't think they are. Are they less hungry? Maybe, but why? And that's where I think this gets really interesting. What would zap the life out of a team to take the hunger away to go out and do their best or to win games? And sure, I think one of the things is that no one really, I shouldn't say no one, but I don't think everyone has bought into Thomas Tuchel since he took over. And we've talked about some of the things that Tuchel has done to alienate players. I think some of that does affect the hunger, the willingness to do whatever it takes, the willingness to fight for someone. Is Tuchel the kind of coach that's inspiring that kind of fire inside players? That's the big question. I mean, we saw an example of Julian Nagelsmann doing just that for Germany over the international break when he gave a rousing speech that apparently affected the players. Now, I'm not saying Tuchel has to go out there and say win one for the Gipper or anything, but if he did, would anybody really buy into it, or would they be rolling their eyes? And we've seen so much positive commentary from both sides here, whether it's the players commenting on the coach or the coach commenting on the players. Everyone is playing nice at the moment, which absolutely tells me that there's a mandate going on. Now, you obviously are never going to be able to prove that, but I think the maturity level of the team and of the front office and of the coaching staff, everyone knows how this season needs to end. No one wants to see finger pointing. No one wants to hear bitching and complaining. Everyone just wants to finish this out strong. So I think that they have, whether it was said or unsaid, decided to try and make this the best possible experience over the next few weeks as they can. But I do think that there's something going on with the players not exactly being willing to leave it all out on the field for Tuchel. And I don't know that that is something that fans would ever, I mean, would fans ever really accept that? I don't think so, because you want your players, no matter what the case, no matter what the game, to go out and give their all. But there, as we've talked about a few times on this show, there's a human element to it. Do you feel scorned? Do you feel like the coach doesn't support you or like you? How do you feel if the coach is going out and talking about other players to replace you? It's not an easy situation, and you can't ever predict how any player is going to really feel, how internally how they're going to take all of that that has went on this season. So is there less hunger there? It's possible. And I think because Karl-Heinz Rummenigge has been around the game for so long and he's seen so many different kinds of players and coaches, I think he senses that there's some things going on. Now, is it a player like Thomas Muller who got passed over earlier in the year? Is he feeling sorry for himself? No, I don't think it's a guy like that. Everything we've heard from Muller has been positive and pointing toward playing for bigger things. Same for Manuel Neuer. Not that he's been in the situation with Muller. Of course, Neuer gets his number called all the time. But Neuer has not said anything detrimental about the coaching staff or the team or anything. He's keeping the focus moving forward. But when we talk about those mid-career players, and really they're in their primes, Kimmich, Goretzka, Gnabry, Zane, those are players I look at. You could throw De Ligt and Upamecano and even Kim Min-jae into the mix. Those are players I look at, and for quite a few of them, Tuchel has been not the best thing for their careers. And it does make me wonder if the players like maybe have a little bit of reservation, maybe that they are a little distracted by some of the things going on or what's been said or even transfer rumors. You could make a really strong argument that Alphonso Davies, while he has not been a target of Tuchel per se, he's felt a little bit of the wrath. Remember, Davies was a guy who almost never came off the field. He almost never didn't start. And Tuchel, quite a few times this season, has put him on the bench, and deservedly so. When you don't perform, you shouldn't be an automatic starter. And listen, when Thomas, if I was a member of the Mueller Mafia, I wouldn't be feeling so confident that Thomas Mueller will be starting this weekend or against Arsenal, given the way he played against Dortmund. I don't think he was really that good. And if I'm Tuchel and I'm assessing things, I'm going to try and ride a hot hand. I'm probably not calling on Mueller this week. But this whole thing, it all comes together because you have Rummenigge seeing this from the outside. You have Tuchel and the players living it. I think there's something to it. I think that there absolutely is maybe a little bit less hunger than normal. I think, and I honestly think it has to do with the whole relationship between the coaching staff and the players. And the fact that, listen, we're seeing more rumors, and they are at this point just rumors, with more key players at Bayern Munich than we ever have at this stage of the season. Aside of Alphonso Davies and what is seems inevitable with Real Madrid in terms of a transfer, we're seeing Joshua Kimmich, we're seeing Leon Goretzka, we're seeing Serge Gnabry. We're seeing guys that were once thought to be keystone figures for this club now probably moving on while they're in their prime. I mean, even Dayo Upamecano and Kim Min-jae and Matthijs de Ligt, good young defenders, quality players. We're seeing even their names bandied about here and there, or at least if not in transfer rumors, stories indicating that they're unhappy. And all three of them, at different points, we have seen stories drop that they're unhappy with their current role. It's a very odd situation. And I think a lot of it comes down to just how the team played this season and that they never really got into any type of real consistent groove under Tuchel. When they haven't had that feeling of dominantly winning games, building up the confidence needed, I think it's all played into this. And when you factor in some of the stuff that Tuchel said and did, it's led to this situation where you have someone like Karl-Heinz Rummenigge who can see it. He can feel it. And I believe it. I do believe that there's less hunger there for some players. I mean, it doesn't make sense. It's not anything fans ever want to see, but unfortunately it does happen. And whether that hunger comes out in the form of poor performances on the pitch or slumps, or lack of focus, or maybe not going in 100% on that tackle when you need to, or maybe taking a lower percentage shot instead of making the extra pass because that's what you want to do. Maybe those are all the little things that are coming into play and that are changing games. When you have little thing after little thing after little thing add up like that, it does affect the outcome of games. So very interesting thoughts from Karl-Heinz Rummenigge on what he thought was going on with the team. And surely this all feeds right into the squad overhaul that we keep hearing about. And it seems like if Rummenigge is saying this, that Max Eberl and the other leaders at the club are all seeing it as well. And they're all factoring in all of this stuff, from performances to mentality to how the players have reacted, because they're looking to rebuild this club's culture, which has clearly been affected over the last season and a half, if not longer. So knowing that, I think we're in for a very interesting and busy summer. The fact that Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, someone who is not as prone to speaking out on these kinds of things as Uli Hoeneß, the fact that he came out and said it, I think that weighs a lot, and I think it's going to affect how Bayern Munich views some of the players and maybe ultimately what the futures are for some of these players at the club. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back. We're going to talk about Bayern Munich's coaching search and how things are going with that. Hang with us. We'll be right back.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Warm-Up Show. This is Chuck Smith. Thanks for hanging in there through the first segment. As I said before we took that break, the field for Bayern Munich's coaching hire for this summer is starting to narrow a bit. We're starting to see some names taken off, although in reality, we don't know how serious of contenders they were anyway. When you're talking about Antonio Conte, Zinedine Zidane, Jose Mourinho, these are names that I don't know how serious things were. The front runners at this point, if you believe the most recent reports out of Germany, are Roberto De Zerbi and Julian Nagelsmann. We have seen Ralf Rangnick also bandied about there, and we've seen Hansi Flick mentioned on the periphery. But as I said on the flagship show, you have to look at this situation from a coaching candidate's perspective. Bayern Munich has been very public in terms of some of the way the executives have spoken, and also with a lot of the reports that are out there, and their admiration for Xabi Alonso. And it looks like that maybe after a year more at Bayer Leverkusen, Alonso will probably be ready to move on. I'm theorizing that it just makes sense that he goes back to Real Madrid at that point. Carlo Ancelotti will probably be very close to wanting to retire then. Liverpool will have a new coach for a year already. Bayern Munich will have hired someone this summer, still be in the same boat as Liverpool. It just seems like Alonso is going to survey the situation and look at Real Madrid and say, this is the way for me. This is the way, right? The Mandalorian. But Bayern Munich, as it has been prone to do over the past few years, is not necessarily one who's afraid to make a change if they want to go out and get something. Now, you have to remember, going back to Julian Nagelsmann's final days, one of the driving factors for him getting sacked was that Brazo and Oliver Kahn were scared they were going to miss the opportunity to bring in Thomas Tuchel, that they needed Tuchel so bad that they were willing to upset an entire season where the treble was still at play just to go out and get Tuchel. Looking back, totally ridiculous decision, as we all know. But now you're in this spot where you might not get the best candidates. You might not get the candidates you want because everyone knows you really have an admiration for Xabi Alonso. And rightfully so. The guy has worked wonders. He's a miracle worker with Bayer Leverkusen this season. And he is the hottest young coach in the game. Everybody wants him. So Bayern Munich wanting him, it's not really that much of a shock, but how public things have been, if you were the agent for one of these other coaching candidates, you would be a little bit apprehensive about guiding your client to that job when you know in a year Bayern could be tempted. And unless someone comes in their first year, which almost never happens, and wins an astronomical amount of games, including the Bundesliga, if they win 2 out of 3 trophies, you might be safe. But if you only win 1 out of 3, which is always possible, you might not be feeling all that great about your standing with the club, knowing that Xabi Alonso is out there. So when we look at the candidates, I think it is narrowing down to 4, really. I think Nagelsmann's going to be hard to get. I think that there's a little bit of desire for him to come back and prove himself, but I also think he still probably stings with how it was all handled. And even though the leadership is different, he's got to be feeling that he got really jobbed. And that's got to sting. It would sting me. I would be affected. I'd be really reluctant to go back into that situation. And granted, he'd be coming into a spot where he would be wielding a little bit more power. He would certainly have leverage in the deal to get what he wants in terms of personnel. I mean, Bayern's desperate. And this is the part of the problem with Bayern's stance in just about every negotiation at this point. They are desperate. They don't want to lose Davies. They also don't want to pay Davies that much. And Real Madrid knows it. So Bayern's desperate to keep Davies, but only to a point. Then they have no chance to really squeeze anything more out of Real Madrid. When you look at this Nagelsmann situation, I mean, Bayern needs a coach. They like Nagelsmann. Nagelsmann's probably going to be perceived as doing a really good job with Germany if they just get out of the group stage. I mean, it's a low bar, but if he gets out of the group stage in what is a pretty brutally weak group, he'll be lauded because this was a team that was terrible essentially since 2017. So 7 years of hell for the German national team fans. Nagelsmann could write that just by getting out of the group stage, because it would be seen as a step in the right direction. It would be seen very positively. So to bring Nagelsmann back, I think, would energize and excite the fan base. But I don't know if the guy wants it. And I don't know if he's willing to come back and you know, eat a lot of bleep, if you want to ask me, because he would have to. I mean, that for anybody with an ego, and we know that the guy has an ego, he's got to be feeling in some ways like, F them. Why should I go back there after how they treated me? And I think that that's going to be something that tugs at him. And, you know, we all know his backstory. He's a Bavarian. He loves the club. And he probably feels some emotional attachment. And there's got to still be a part of him that even as a kid, like, he's remembering all those good things. And he probably wants to go back and be the leader of the club. But he's been spurned. He's been burned. He's been everything by the club, given how they handled him. They told him he'd have a 5-year project, and they gave him 1.5 years. It's going to be very difficult in my mind to get Nagelsmann, especially when there will be other jobs, including Liverpool, with clubs that are going to be looking at him. And if he does go out, I know he wants his situation settled before the Euros, but if it's not, and he goes out in the Euros and Germany does well, he's going to be the number 2 hot coaching prospect behind Alonso in Europe. So Nagelsmann, to me, I can see it happening, but I also think there's a lot of reasons to think that it might not. And I think how he was handled and the way it was handled. And the fact is, you can blame it on Kahn and Brazo, but, you know, and you know, everyone, they have said they've acted alone on it, but other people at the club, you know, were part of that. And I'm not saying they made the call or they handled it that way, but Herbert Heiner was there, you know, Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, despite they were detached, they're always there. I mean, they always have their hands in the mix in one way or the other. And I think part of it is Nagelsmann probably realizes that the culture of the club in the front office allowed that to happen. And I don't know if he could get over it in time to think it won't happen again, especially with Alonso being available in 2025. So Nagelsmann, I still feel like he is the front runner. He is the one that Bayern Munich wants the most. I just don't know how receptive he'll be when there will be other jobs and other clubs that will want to pay him. So that is going to be a very interesting situation. When it comes to De Zerbi, it's, again, you're looking at a hot young coach. Track record, probably not quite as there, especially when you're talking about coming to Germany and being able to do it there. We have seen that this is not an easy transition for coaches to make, particularly if they're coming in from other leagues. Even Pep Guardiola never really got the best out of the group that he had. I mean, he did not win a Champions League with a roster that was completely overflowing with talent. So I don't necessarily hate the idea of hiring someone like that. And I think that Bayern at this point needs to be open to everything. But I don't know that just because you hire a good, talented, smart young coach like De Zerbi that it's going to work out. And I think that there are some reservations probably on Bayern's end about that. And I believe there's a release clause, which in the grand scheme of things won't be all that important to Bayern Munich. They're more focused on doing whatever it takes to get the right person. But I don't know that you're going to get a full buy-in from the board and all of the executives to say, like, this is our guy. This is who we need. Because I just don't think he's quite there yet with his track record. And I think if he were to move on and he were to accept a bigger job in England or go to a bigger club in another country, it would probably help his situation. But Bayern Munich is a very difficult situation and case for any coach. You're going to have a roster in transition, and even though your input might be valued and you'll probably be able to get some of the players you want, you're not going to get everything you want. And you're certainly going to be working with a locker room that's already been a bit damaged. You're going to have some really high-priced, big egoed veterans who have established themselves and been there. They're going to have expectations out of you. You're going to have some young players coming up who want to prove themselves and they want the opportunities. It's not an easy job to take because you're going to have to juggle what's best for the current team with what's best for the future. And it's a very difficult task to do that. We've seen even Julian Nagelsmann, someone who was heralded for his ability to work with young players. He couldn't even figure out that balance. Now, Tuchel, to his credit, has been a little bit better. If you could say anything about Tuchel and what he's done positively since taking over, he did start to integrate some of those young players like Pavlovich and Tell. And to a point, I mean, you have to look at how those players have gotten better over the course of this season, and they have. So there's been some positive movement under Tuchel, but the next coach is going to have to come in and try and mirror some of what Tuchel did, but also balance how to keep those veterans happy and to also compete for three trophies. Because after Bayern Munich is going to go trophyless this season, which looks like it's going to happen, fans are going to be very antsy and very nervous about next season. And I don't think at this stage, De Zerbi is quite the coach that Bayern needs. It would be, in my mind, be very tough for him to step in and be impactful and be the kind of coach that's going to immediately have the ability to come in and win and find balance and control the locker room. Just doesn't seem like the right time. And timing, as we know, is everything when hiring a coach. Ralf Rangnick, he's with Austria right now. This is someone who is intimately familiar with the league. He's intimately familiar with the roster. He knows the executives. You would think that this would be the kind of solution that Bayern would be looking for, because he is someone with a track record. He is someone who would command respect within a locker room. He is someone that has been focused on developing youth and finding that balance between youth development, keeping veterans happy, and being competitive in all your competitions. It almost seems like he would be the perfect stopgap to hang in for a couple of years before Bayern Munich were to pursue a coach like Xabi Alonso or Roberto De Zerbi. Unfortunately, there's no guarantee that the next coach is going to be there for a couple of years. And if I'm Rangnick, I'm very skeptical. What if I go in and I can't win a trophy? What if Leverkusen does it again? What if they're just as strong next year, which could happen? What if the DFB Pokal proves to be filled with potholes like it has been for years with Bayern Munich? What if the Champions League, with Man City and Real Madrid both probably getting stronger, what if I can't go in and win that? So for Rangnick, while this may be a dream job for him, it's one that, if anything, he should be a little bit skeptical about because of the whole Alonso situation. And if Roenick doesn't come in and handle the locker room with aplomb, if he doesn't go in and win two out of three competitions, I honestly feel like fans would be clamoring for his job. The executives would probably be getting a little bit antsy. I mean, it's almost as if he might be a little bit too established. De Zerbe might be a little bit too, what should we say, inexperienced for the role. You need Goldilocks and the Three Bears here. You need something in the middle of that. Maybe Nagelsmann's the answer. Maybe it's Alonso in 2 years, or in 2025, we should say. It's tough to say who fits that. But then you look around, and there's another candidate. And there's someone that probably fits that mold. Someone who's done it before. Someone who's won everything there is to win at the club level. Someone who knows the locker room inside and out. Someone who is good with working with young players while handling veterans, while also balancing being competitive in all of the competitions. Yep, that person's Hansi Flick. Now, Flick is said not to be a favorite for the gig. He is said not to be someone who Uli Hoeneß favors. But the more and more we go through this, and the longer this goes on, it kind of feels like Hansi Flick's going to end up being the man for the job. And I'm sure Flick would probably be a little hesitant as well, looking at the Alonso situation. But I think Flick also knows enough and is experienced enough to know that Alonso probably is going to Real Madrid anyway. And Flick, for as much as his tenure at the club ended in a really tumultuous fashion, that was due to a personal conflict with Brazo. I mean, there's nothing more to that. The only remnant we still have of that war is that Uli Hoeneß still apparently holds a grudge against Flick. And Flick wasn't perfect, and he went out and he proved that maybe the players won't buy his quote-unquote BS, I guess I would say. Maybe they won't buy into it like they did before. Maybe he's lost the magic touch. But I think when you look at all these candidates, there are no sure things here. Bayern is in a spot where they need to make this transition and lead the club into its next generation. Flick definitely has ideas about the kind of players he would want to do that. I mean, he was a guy who wanted Florian Wirtz way back in the day then. He wanted Bayern to go out and spend on Wirtz then because he saw something in the kid. It's not as if the guy can't identify talent. And listen, we can go back and forth all day about the stories from the past, who he wanted, who he didn't. There's a lot of nonsense out there. There's also a lot of people that will point to, well, he wanted Kai Havertz and Timo Werner. But yeah, he did. But we don't know how the players would have functioned under him. They could have been great under him at Bayern Munich. We don't know. It's kind of unfair to say, like, just because they panned out one way somewhere else, that's how it would have worked at Bayern Munich. I mean, if Robert Lewandowski would have went from Dortmund to Atletico Madrid, would anybody, and skip the whole Bayern Munich part of his career, would anybody really be regarding him as one of the top strikers of all time? Probably not. So it's just a matter of where you land and how you fit in that environment. And Flick, I think at that point in his career, he had a great feel for the locker room. He had players buying in. And if you remember back then, the only conflicts we really heard about were with Leroy Sané. And all Flick did with Sané was make him a more complete two-way player. So I'm not anti-Flick in this case. I think it almost makes the most sense out of all these candidates. And I'm not saying that Nagelsmann wouldn't be a good fit or he couldn't come in and win, but I'm saying how that happened and the recency of that happening probably makes this still too touchy of a situation for him. With Flick, it's been some time now. The players have changed. The executives have changed a bit, but he still knows enough with how to work with this group. He's still proven that on the club level that he has been an effective coach and can win games. I think a lot of people, because of how he flamed out with Germany, underestimate just how good he was, or just frankly forget how good he was at Bayern Munich. And yeah, there are some things with how he coaches and his philosophies that would irritate fans. But at this point, what doesn't irritate fans? Bayern fans, on social media, you could just throw a name out and you would have 1,000 responses of people dogging him and another 1,000 of people saying that the people dogging him are crazy. It's that divisive right now. And whatever the hire is, barring Xabi Alonso changing his mind, people are going to be irate about it. And I'm actually at the point where, of all of these candidates, if Nagelsmann truly is against coming back, then I think Flick has to be the call. Because I think he's the only one who has enough cachet to come in and handle the situation. He has enough clout and enough experience to show like he has done this before, that the players can buy into him. And yeah, we could look at his Germany tenure and we could say how disastrous that was. And I talk about this all the time and you guys probably hate it. But I firmly believe, outside of some of the ways he handled his personnel with that team, I mean, clearly Niklas Füllkrug needed to play more at the World Cup, and that's not saying that Füllkrug would have saved them. He was just the right man for that time. But that was more in my mind on how players handled the situation. And as we saw in that Amazon documentary, it was really disrespectful how they handled it. It was really immature. And you could say, yeah, well, that's Flick's job to make sure that doesn't happen. But sometimes the players are what they are, and they are who they are. You can't change some of that. No one's going to make Julian Brandt show up on time for meetings. He's clearly been getting away with that at Dortmund if he's doing it on the national team scene. So Flick, at the club level, he can have a little bit more control of that. I think in the end, he's probably going to be the right man for the gig. Even if it's just a 3-year stint, I think it's a situation where Bayern's really going to have to look seriously at him, and they might have to get over Uli Hoeneß's apprehension about bringing Flick back. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to give you the entertainment rundown that will only be a couple of minutes because I absolutely loved the last episode of Curb. But yeah, I want your opinions. Let me know who you think and who you think is going to end up in this job and what you think about Flick and possibly coming back to lead the team. Hang with us. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Warm-Up Show. This is Chuck Smith, and as we do around this time in every show, it's the Entertainment Rundown. I know some of you like it, some of you don't, but I like to have this kind of interaction too because, I like getting feedback from people on what they think of certain things, and I also like getting recommendations too. So, as you could probably guess, a lot of my nighttime viewing has been tied up with the Phillies, who are off to a awful start, and you know, listen, I will never really dive too far into any of this, but what I will say is when you have two dead ends in the lineup like Johan Rojas and Castellanos at this point where neither guy can really hit, you can't just give away, you know, 6 to 8 outs a game. You can't do that. I don't care what team you are. And you can't have a bullpen that's a gas can, essentially. But that's my Phillies commentary. I won't bore you with that. You're not here. If you want to hear that, hit me up on Twitter. I'm happy to go back and forth about the Phillies with anybody. Anyway, second to last episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. It was tremendous. We saw a cameo by Bruce Springsteen. We saw some really, really funny stuff from Leon and Larry and Jeff and Susie. I thought everything in this episode was great. And for as many times this season as I have kind of, you know, I don't want to say been against what I saw from Curb, but not everything I will say hit the mark at times. But this episode was another one of those that was just great. And there were, again, the intersecting storylines, the nonstop laughing. I had such a good time watching it. And, you know, listen, from the get-go, from the masseuse scene in the beginning with the happy ending accusation, which if you didn't see the show, you're probably like, what in the hell is going on? But from that, it was one nonstop laugh after another. You know, the intersecting storylines, of course, it was the masseuse, Larry not reading the manuscript, the zipper, Bruce Springsteen, COVID, the floor effing, which was, you know, listen, that was absolutely hilarious the way it was described throughout the episode. Just all of that. Those were the primary storylines. But what stole the show for me, aside of, you know, it was kind of funny to see Bruce Springsteen in that environment with that cast, and just the whole scene when they were in Jeff's house and when Larry was going through, you know, everything with the boss, and we get to meet Ken, who was formerly Kendra, who formerly had relations with Larry before undergoing a change. I mean, there was all that, but what really stole the show from me during that was Susie in the background. Now, Susie, any of her interactions with Larry are so volatile that, I mean, they make me laugh because there's just, it's just nonstop insults and the disdain that she has for Larry and vice versa. It always just hits. I mean, there's never a dull scene with those two. But when the Ken character was going through the former relationship with Larry, and Susie, she didn't have to say a word, and she wasn't even featured in the shot, but her facial expressions throughout the whole thing and the way that you could tell she was thoroughly enjoying to have this kind of material on Larry. I mean, I was dying just looking at Susie the whole time. And someone else who I felt really stole the show in the episode was Leon. Now, Leon is the king of the one-liners. When Larry said that he was taking Leon to get the shingles vaccine, the look on Leon's face was hilarious. We had Leon trying to hit on Larry's new lawyer. I mean, the whole thing. It was just one nonstop one-liner after another from Leon throughout the storyline. His whole floor effing explanation was great as well. I mean, I literally died. I was laughing this whole episode, thought it was great. Now, if I had any critique of the episode, the one thing that is kind of weird, and it's not the first time I've mentioned this, but it is something that's kind of struck me about the season. Some of the storylines are definitely a couple of years old. So you can tell when Larry was writing this, like you're talking about COVID, you're talking about the hashtag Me Too movement. You're talking about the issue we had earlier in the season with the GPS and trying to get the GPS to understand you and him freaking out about it. There are definitely some things that you could tell he wrote over the course of time. And honestly, they're a little bit outdated at this point. It's not as if there's a hysteria around COVID anymore, whether it's just people got over it or moved on or whatever. It's not, clearly not like it was in terms of being at the focal point of everyone's life. You know, even the GPS thing was like, yes, everyone can relate to it, but that was more of a running joke a couple of years ago. So that's the only critique I would have, but it's not even like a major one because quite frankly, he hits on everything. Every single thing that Larry put together for this episode and they wrote about, tremendous. So it earned a 5 out of 5 from me just because it was nonstop laughter. And again, I always look for these Curb episodes. How does it all tie together? What is the journey like with all of these intersecting storylines and how they're all brought together at the end? Again, did so perfectly. 5 out of 5 from me. Totally enjoyed this week's episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. As we look forward to that final episode, I feel more and more strongly about the prediction I made with Larry trying to right the wrongs of the Seinfeld ending by recreating it, but only doing it better this time. And I don't know if I'm right. I'm probably not, but I get this feeling that Larry never thought the Seinfeld ending was that bad, that he liked the Seinfeld ending. And he wants to go out and prove that if he could have worked at the Seinfeld ending a little bit more blue, with a little bit more risque material, that it would work. And I think that's what we're going to get. I think that final episode is going to be Larry in court with a bunch of character witnesses testifying against him. And I think it will probably be hilarious. The original Seinfeld ending, it definitely missed the mark for a lot of reasons. And we all know, if you watched Seinfeld at the time, how highly anticipated it was. it just fell flat. It didn't work. So I'm interested to see if Larry tries that same tactic, if he can pull it off this time around. And if you think about it, it would be the most Larry David thing ever to try and do this again and risk pissing off everyone that had invested all this time into the show. But honestly, even if Larry doesn't, it doesn't hit the mark, which it might or might not, this has been one of the most consistently funny shows I've ever seen. In terms of comedies, it would absolutely be up there in my top five. I don't know what my top five would be off the top of my head, but I can assure you that this would be in it. And, you know, if you know me, you know I love Eastbound and Down as well. Again, just one nonstop laugh after another with that show, just like in Curb Your Enthusiasm. So really love this episode. I'm looking forward to seeing the finale. I will be sad when it ends because it was just such a dependable show, one that you could count on every week to give you that laugh, especially if you really felt like you needed one. So I hope you enjoyed it. Would love your feedback on that episode of Curb as well. That will wrap up this episode of the Weekend Warm-Up Show. As always, you can get me at the Barrel Blog on Twitter. You can get the site at Bavarian FB Works. You can get this podcast at Bavarian Podcast. You can get I Need No Name at BFWINNN. You can get Tom Adams at TommyAdams71. You can get Siler at BFWSiler. You can get all of our coverage for the Heidenheim match at BavarianFootballWorks.com, along with all the great work of our wonderful staff, the podcasters and writers there. If you have not checked out the preview show ahead of the Heidenheim match, please do so. Get my takes on why Bayern Munich is could be in trouble heading into the match and why some fans are really disappointed with the season. So really looking forward to that game this weekend and also seeing how Bayern Munich fares against Arsenal next week. Have a couple of beers on me. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you next time.